direction things have been taking. And the important thing, as I've said so many times, is not the numbers. It's what even one individual can do for the church. So I'll briefly report, first of all, on the Eucharistic Crusade. As I mentioned, the Jesuit Provincial of the United States met at the University of Detroit all last week. They only finished the meeting, and they did not yet appoint a national director for the Apostleship of Prayer, not to say for the Eucharistic Crusade, which was thoroughly predictable. It means, therefore, that I'll just follow my own provincial's directive of doing what we can do. It also, I think, at least in some degree, symbolizes what's going on in the church. As I talk to people by now, so many over the years, they have some idea, given the aberrations, sometimes the histrionics that go on at Mass or the liturgy, or the strange things being taught, say, in, well, what should be catechetical programs. They are not comfortable. But people, as I have again said more than once, and nothing I can say will add to what I've said before, the depth and extent of the crisis of the Catholic Church no human words can express. It is the deepest in 20 centuries of the Church's history, and that is not a hyperbole. There's only one answer. That is to find in countries like ours those who still have the faith, first condition, that deep, strong zeal is not the same as having a strong faith. A strong zeal to share that faith with others. And then thirdly, they'll sacrifice themselves, and it means sacrifice, spend themselves in bringing those who have lost the faith back to the faith, well, that can be done, and bringing the faith to those who never had it. I got a call from Rome 3 days ago from the young American who is now studying in Rome, who made an 8-day retreat at the university here in Detroit. The day after he finished the retreat, went back to Rome for his studies. He called me up, and I told him during the retreat, among other things, there was great need for missionaries in Albania. Guess what he did? I'm not exaggerating. He mobilized 100 seminarians in Rome to spend at least 2 weeks in the Christmas holidays in Albania. Isn't that neat? My job now is to convince the bishop that I'm sober. But we have to go to, I can use the word, extremes in our country. One large dies after another. The loss, and not just, say, in regular Mass attendance on Sundays, but the loss of membership in the Catholic Church is well over 50%, says the Council. Closer to 60-70%, for example, in the Archdiocese of Detroit. You don't read that in the Michigan Catholic. The machinery seems to be going on like usual. Well, it's not. I'm still on part one. I thought for a moment I would photograph this, but decided against it. But if somebody has access to many photocopies. There might be some value. There are about 12 pages. This is the full issue, what are called Conversations, of a Jesuit publication on Jesuit higher education. Number 6, fall 1994. Thanks. That makes it 9.
We have a quorum.
I'm talking about part one, about the crisis of the church and reporting on the Eucharistic Crusade, that during that week-long meeting at the university here in Detroit, the Jesuit provincials did not yet appoint a national director. I don't say for the Eucharistic Crusade, even for the apostleship of prayer. At any rate, the lead article is entitled Jesuit See Catholic ... Not So Sure. In other words, are Jesuit colleges and universities, are they Catholic? Answer: we're not sure. And that, believe me, is no joke. It is most serious. And just to read a line or two from an article, as I say, if someone wants to make copies of this very learned article entitled Conversations on Jesuit Parentheses and Catholic ? Higher Education. Jesuit see Catholic not so sure. Just one short paragraph. Marginalized as it may be, Catholic, as in quotes, Catholic college or university, nevertheless remains a nagging problem. The Galileo case was settled recently. Wasn't that a relief? But the unfortunate and altogether unjust treatment of Charles Curran, the Catholic University of America theologian, driven from Catholic higher education for views little different from those held by most American Catholics, disastrously resuscitated ancient suspicions about the church. Only one problem. For 18 years, Charles Curran taught for the blessing of the Episcopal Board of Directors of Catholic University. Taught, and I mean this, not a single sin against the sixth commandment is contrary to the will of God. Adultery, sodomy, fornication, abortion, all legitimate, said Curran for 18 years. To the Pope to step in to finally get him out over the heads of the American hierarchy. That's part one. Now, what they're going to be doing regarding the Eucharistic Crusade, I'll keep you informed, and I should be home then next Wednesday.
Father, there's a parish that wants to start the Eucharistic Crusade and on their own, and wants to know what is available to help them get it started.
Now here's what my own plan is. I'll talk this over again with my provincial. There is no Eucharistic Crusade officially established. I'm not sure there will be. I was told by my general to start it. So I did everything humanly possible. Couldn't get 35 dioceses signed up. So I've done my work. What I would do then, and by next week I'll let you know, because there are dioceses and parishes that are interested. What we're doing, and we have, by the way, a Marianne Catechist by the name of Marianne, one word, Marianne Siegmund, S-I-E-G-M-U-N-D, in Dallas, Texas. Marianne, you may have met her. She came from Dallas to Scranton. It would be good to do business with her, because Marianne then, as far as one person, will be chaperoning the program. It will be she. Now, what we are doing now is getting together the kind of materials that people programming the Eucharistic Crusade will need. Literature, pamphlets, information, badges, pins, whatever. There used to be, when the Eucharistic Crusade was in operation. Now, hopefully, by the end of November, a national director of the Apostleship of Prayer will be appointed. By which time, then, I will be in contact with the national director. And we do have, then, an office in Washington, Intermurifica, for which I think I've given you the phone number. It is going to have the phone number. It's the one that I generally use. It's 301-949-4840. And I think I've told you, too, Dolores O'Connell is working full-time on that. Give up a very fine teaching position at the University of Maryland to work on this. So we will provide whatever is necessary to get the Eucharistic Crusade, maybe in quotation marks, underway. Okay? I think by next week I'll be more sure as to just what material will be available, and we'll have maybe even the beginnings of a catalog. That's the Eucharistic Crusade. Now, on the catechetical side, which is still, you might say, number one, though it is becoming a larger venture. Today, I sent a fax along with a dozen pages to Bishop Bruskowitz of Lincoln, Nebraska. Bishop Bruskowitz, by the way, agreed. Now, something may happen, but so far he is the one who has agreed to serve on our board of directors for the International Association of Catholic Catechists. As you may know, he is a former Monsignor from Wisconsin, who has been about 2 years, less than 2 years, Bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska, thoroughly Orthodox, and all that I know about him, I spoke to him yesterday by telephone, not just Orthodox, but also hard-hitting and uncompromising. Now, this second area, that is the Catholic Catechist Association. And each week I will keep you informed of where we're going, how far we've moved. As I said today, I faxed 14 pages to Bishop Bruskowitz. His name, by the way, is Bishop Fabian, Fabian, Fabian Bruskowitz, Bruskewitz, Bruskowitz, of Lincoln, Nebraska. Now what we're doing, by the way, and anyone that you know or yourselves, anyone who would wish to apply for a salary paying position, either as head of the corporation for the association, to be called the International Association of Catholic Catechists, or the editor. And by the way, be sure to get word to Jim McNally so he gets his name out of the hopper, because there are names that are coming in.
He just called me Saturday.
Please?
Jay just called me Saturday.
Okay. So, but various offers are coming in. For example, the editor of a youth magazine on the West Coast sent his credentials, who applied for a position. In any case, there will be two positions open. One as director of the association, and the other editor of the magazine. Our present hope now is to have the first issue out in January, but keep postponing as we move along for obvious reasons. And the association is to span English-speaking countries, United States and Canada, and of course England, Ireland, many countries in Africa, Australia, India, and so on. Now there, as you realize, is not just an ocean, it's several oceans in size, this enterprise. Nothing like it in existence. There's one such magazine that I've been working with OBC on for the last 12 years. On a more modest scale, that's Four Villages, for the congregation, Four Villages. But then the congregation, Four Villages, publishes the magazine. We take care of all the mechanics of the magazine. This, however, we will be running the magazine, and the amount of work, breathtaking is understatement. And all that I'm getting, all the feedback, or feed in, or input, indicates that the established catechetical machinery, with all the pious talk, is not friendly, or certainly not promoting the catechism of the Catholic Church. In any case, that's the purpose. It's not just the book, our book, the catechism, to promote, but obviously the contents, which is the great hope of the Holy Father. So I'll keep you people informed, and the outreach is immense. Now the finances, of course, will have to be provided. Resources will have to be tapped. But all of this, I'll keep you informed, forming a board of directors. But the money, of course, will have to come from persons who both have access to that kind of money, but also and especially from dedicated people who are willing to do the work, because it's just a lot of work. And then I think I should, Lewis, bring up again yours and is it number of you?
Charles.
Yes, the Charles. The people that are interested in going on for the priesthood and forming a a religious community that would be dedicated on principle to promoting the catechism. And there cannot be any ordinary way of doing it, because we're not living, to say the least, in ordinary times. And Karnasanjas will be, if I know that, in the United States, are they on the 14th and 15th of November in Philadelphia? He may be coming to Washington. I'll be in Washington, in fact, tomorrow, because I'm going to Washington tomorrow for the weekend. Well, that's the input there. Thank you. That makes 11. You saw with a just a baker's half a dozen. Now what we're going to do now, and I like to, by the way, spend whatever time we can on the scholastic philosophy. Who remembers what number we got to in our last class?
Fifty-five,
eh? You know what we're doing. What we're doing is what I'm calling lining up a series of questions that I call the Catechism of Scholastic Philosophy. At first hearing, maybe even after second or third hearing, you might say to yourself, what's this got to do with the faith? And my answer is, everything. Without a philosophical foundation, no one, and the word is no one, can understand the faith. And this is the great need. Remember the 13th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, a long parable of the sower. By now I must have quoted that parable and referred to it 100 or more times in conferences and homilies. The first of the fruitless soil was the wayside. Seed falls on the wayside, produces no yield. And Christ came to explain. He said, they are those who, having received the word of God, fail to understand it, and therefore, the evil spirit comes along and steals the word of God from their hearts. No one knows the figures. My estimate is at least 30 million ex-Catholics today in the United States who've given up their faith. At least. Rome's figures for Hispanic Catholics is 1 million Hispanic Catholics are lost to the Catholic Church every year. 1.5 million every year. 10 years, 10 million. 30 years, 30 million. And with a large family, that just proliferates. And not understanding the faith. And there's no understanding the faith without philosophy. I believe 55 was, correct me if I'm wrong, what is the metaphysical essence of a created being? Was that correct? Did I give the answer to it?
Yes, Father.
Okay, 56. What are the three basic qualities of all essences? What are the three basic qualities of all essences? By the way, over the years, first of all, I majored in philosophy in my undergraduate theology. And I majored in philosophy in my graduate study in the Society of Jesus, till I got my doctorate later on in theology. I've taught philosophy over the years. And I can tell you, there are many people, even going through the course, whom a course in philosophy leaves blank. If they're not bored, they're not really interested. There's only one hope for those people keeping the faith, and their minds will not be exposed to intelligent criticism of the faith. Otherwise, they will lose the faith. Beginning with bishops. I have talked with bishops who lost their faith. Priests, many, including my own former teachers, who lost the faith. Bill, or Dan.
I have a question, Father, regarding this.
Question number 226. Oh, in the question and answer, Catholic Catechism reads, what does the third article of the Apostles' Creed mainly teach us? Answer, it teaches us how the second person of the Holy Trinity became a human being through the operation of the Holy Spirit. I have never read this before. Was this some cunning editor's work at Doubleday? Well, I don't think so. I do proofread all the manuscripts. Thomas Aquinas uses human being. Normally, I don't use it. And the reason is because the word human being, for many people speaking English, connotes a human person. But obviously, not necessarily. So, in other words, I don't think, because it's some years since I've gone over the manuscript, but I think, as my memory tells me, that I left that stand. As I say, St. Thomas, now of course, he does not obviously write in English. And he might say, humanomese at St. Thomas. At any rate, human being need not mean a human person, which Christ certainly was not. But thanks. It will pardon my conscience whether in the next edition I should change it. Thanks, Daniel. I'll save this. Once more, what are the three basic qualities of all essences? All essences are unchangeable, necessary, and eternal. That's a strange statement. All essences, qua essences, are unchangeable, necessary, and eternal. And this is where, let me tell you, I've just taught too much theology to too many intelligent people not to know that, and it's especially on this unchangeableness that so many people just do not clearly understand what we mean when we say that an essence, just because it's an essence, is unchangeable. Of course, that is not the unchangeableness or immutability of God. But I can tell you this, and I say this from the depths of my being, Americans, or in general, those who speak only English, I would be telling you the truth if I did not say this. Those who speak only English would be the rare person who thinks clearly. Just don't think clearly. They don't have the vehicle, the vocabulary, to distinguish among the ideas. Answer. Question is, what is the unchangeableness of an essence? Answer. It is the quality of an essence to remain itself. A thing may change, but the requirements of an essence remain the same. The essence of man is to be a rational animal. No matter how much a particular human being may change, the requirements for an essence remain. All I can tell you is, but I better say it, there's all the difference in the world between using words and having the human mind wrap itself around the ideas behind those words. What a difference. What a difference. All the difference between two people talking, as I use the word, at each other, and two minds communicating. And two mouths speaking. And both with good ears so they can hear the other mouth. Has nothing, and I mean this, has nothing to do with the mind of one entering the mind of the other. Am I making sense? And this is no necessary connection with intelligence. And the best example I can give you, my own Jesuits, well, there's 6 out of them. They had to get special permission, which was seldom granted, to start their theology when I had them in first year theology, usually around the age of 30, without having a graduate degree. They had to have either a master's or a doctoral degree before they started theology. Although we told them, wait, get your degree, a graduate degree first. I had these fellows in class. They were anything but stupid. But what a difference between having the mental capacity to grasp an idea, as if somebody communicates, and just not having that capacity. And the one thing, not being pious in saying this, and the most fundamental need in the mind that can grasp these ideas, I'm talking about, well, matters of faith, is humility of mind. When you're dealing with intellectuals, the hardest thing for an intellectual is to have a humble mind. How well I know. Very hard. They can pick up all kinds of talk about things, but they don't really grasp it. Okay. Question 58. What is the necessity of an essence? Identifying the three qualities, remember? What is the necessity of an essence? Essences must be what they are. Anything must have the essence that belongs to it in order to be what it is. For many people, I think you're talking nonsense, or they don't get it. And again, and I've taught also in Europe, and I've taught people from Europe and from Asia. I would never dare say this to my American Jesuits, but my Jesuits from India, no comparison, intellectually far superior to Americans, far superior. I never just had no just hand picked. The Western mind, and especially Western American mind, is just so preoccupied with material things. That ideas, things that have to do with reality, and not just with the size and shape and color and texture. Say that someone, a thousand shades of red, some kind of a thousand shades of red. So, in other words, the essence is that which makes the thing what it is. 59. Again, strange question. Our essence is eternal. They are eternal in what? In that what is essential to any given being has always been essential. It is essential now and must be essential into the eternal future. In a few days we're going to celebrate Halloween. We had a building we had our class last Sunday. I gave a lecture on Halloween. First in my life, I've given a lecture on Halloween. Which is, the resurgence of sheer, pure, unqualified paganism. Pre-Christian paganism. Inherited from the Druids of Northern Europe and from the Romans and they in turn from the, especially the Babylonians and Egyptians before Christ. Then as Christianity converted these people, kept under wraps. And it would have to be England. Which then, if I can use a strange word, canonized the birthday of Protestantism. The birthday of Protestantism is Halloween, October 31st, 1517. And ever since, the Religion of All Saints has become the laughing stock of the English speaking world. Ridiculed. The last thing and the so-called reformers believed in was saints. And of course, in this constancy out of the adjective eternal, human being is a human being. And even though, say, our body decays, but soul remains and remains alive. And it's a soul of a human being. Imagine anybody praying to, dear soul of Saint Francis. My gosh, he's liable to appear to the person who would say that. When do you stop that kind of language? Please speak to me. I'm in heaven. My body is not yet in heaven. It's me. Essences do not change. Question 61. How are we doing on the time, Bill?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Okay. By the way, Daniel, your question you raised, anybody wants to raise questions, by all means. Or objections. I'm so used to objections.
Father, how would you respond to a person who says that by baptizing a pagan feast, for example, the harvest feast that the Romans had, you're in a way approving of it, and wouldn't it be better to just try to eliminate that those thoughts entirely from, say, the pagans you're trying to convert?
How do you get the first part of your question, Bill?
By baptizing pagan feasts, are you in effect approving of that feast? For example, the harvest festival that the Romans celebrated.
What's the?
The harvest festival that the Romans celebrated, and asking for trouble later on.
Well, I would say you better baptize that pagan feast. And this was one of the main, in fact, the main objection to the new catechism by those who, of course, do not believe in the constancy of our faith, and these questions that we ask about essences apply especially to our faith. Instead of having a catechism, they see what we want is enculturation. So it's one thing to speak of, see, baptizing some Roman or pagan feast. Well, what depends on what you mean by baptizing that feast. In other words, if you retain the essence of what that feast stands for, well then, to say you're baptizing that feast is a misnomer. What the church did, and this over the centuries, is the externals of what had been paganism, the church accepted so many of the external practices, but not because they were pagan, but because there have to be external practices to every religion. In other words, it's over 30 years that I've been teaching comparative religion. And I've told my students, the secret is to know enough about, say, Hinduism or Buddhism or Islam, to know what within these religions is true. Based on what we know about Christianity, and then what you do is use what is, well, true or good in that other religion, because it is true. So then you're not really, you might say, baptizing, you can use the expression, But what you're doing is recognizing that in every religion there are certain values which are sound. But somebody, believe me, you better know what you're talking about, though. And I would say this, that the religions, for example, take Hinduism. For most people, not just geographically, but ideologically, what could be further removed from Christianity than Hinduism?